Hello everyone, welcome to Contact Lost, the Polish Warhammer 40k podcast about competitive Warhammer both in Poland and abroad. Today is Wednesday, the 22nd of June, and oh my god, is there a lot of stuff to talk about. We have some rumors when it comes to, not even rumors, I think some confirmed stuff for Warzone Nephilim. We have new points. Apparently, there's a data slate inbound for tomorrow. So, oh my goodness, so much stuff is going on. But today's episode will focus on a particular army with some particular points changes and some other stuff around it. As you can see on the screen already, my guest is the one and only David Gaylard. So hello, David.
Hey, thanks. And thanks for having me. And for anyone listening, Tomek and I have tried to get a podcast together for the last couple of months. So yeah. Last time I had to bail on him. So this time I said, look, I'm going to be proactive and hit him up. Let's get something sorted in chat.
it's fantastic. Thanks. It's fantastic because, you know, we started talking about that today and out of nowhere we are recording an episode, which only shows, you know, that we can cooperate great and we will cooperate great in the future, hopefully, as well. So, David, you've been pretty successful with your Tyranids recently. And for everyone listening today, we are focusing on the Tyranids, not the entirety of the things that I mentioned, but Tyranids specifically. Who better than our specialist here? So, David, you've been playing the Tyranids, as far as I know, from like the Leviathan supplement through Stampede to the new Codex. Tell us something about it. How have you been enjoying them? How do you find the army? And then we'll move on to the changes.
Yeah, like a lot of people, I think it kind of harkens back to when I was a kid on a farm in New Zealand when I first started playing Warhammer. When I was 12 or 13 years old, I had my 20 Gene Stealers and an old metal Screamer Carnifex. And I had about 30 models and would get crushed by my Space Marine friend at the time when we played on the carpet floor and stuff like that. And then I took a long break and then didn't touch Warhammer for, you know, over a decade, and then moved to the United Kingdom where I was introduced by my good friend Vincent Chan to play again. And I'm quite a competitive player. So naturally, the first army I built again was Tyranids. And I spent the very, very latest parts of 8th edition, but more or less 9th, getting blasted away by my friend's Tau. And then decided to, if I was going to play competitively, play AdMech for the season where they were very strong. But for the most, my personal best success has definitely been with Tyranids. And I re-picked them back up again in, I believe it was November, December, when the Leviathan supplement got introduced. And that's when you could take the double exploding sixes, Devourer of Termagants, and then there were a couple of other obsec strats and stuff like that as well. And then they strike bang, layer caked, Crusher Stampede on top of Leviathan. So all of a sudden you had a terrible army with three rule books in it, and it was just an absolute powerhouse. People who are listening probably haven't seen me before, but I was fortunate enough to come fifth in LVO playing Crusher Stampede, where I was the top of seed going into the top eight in day two. And I think I dropped like 11 points or something like that over the six games. So I was having an absolute blast with Crusher Stampede. But Nids have always been my favorite since a little kid. I think they just have a special place in my heart for me. So I am absolutely thrilled that they're in a great, if not too dominant position right now. Yeah.
Right, so I wanted to ask about that. So what have you been, which build have you been supporting recently? Because there were a bunch. I think the Polish community for a while focused on the less obvious ones, like Behemoth, maybe Kraken. I see that now there is slowly this tendency to go towards Leviathan. I think abroad that this was the other way around. So were you part of the Leviathan bandwagon, so to say, or did you play something else?
Yeah, so I was straight into Leviathan. I think like in many things, I've got a great team around me, so I've got the ability to play test quite a lot. And so when the book first came out, I was trying weird stuff and quickly dismissed some units that I just thought, well, the power level of this is just far too low. And then I kind of came around to Warriors, and I kind of quickly realized that Warriors were probably the best unit in the Codex. And the reason why they were is because you could layer so many defensive buffs on them, including minus one to hit, transhuman, 5 up invulnerable, 5 up feel no pain. You have access to minus one damage strat, So there are almost, there are about two profiles in the whole of Warhammer that actually are effective into them. And then so, you know, that kind of naturally leans into Leviathan. So that's kind of where I wanted to push. Obviously, throughout the last 3 months, Tyranids have changed quite a lot. We've had the FAQ where the Maleceptor got hit. And then we've also had an FAQ with Encircle the Prey and stuff. So I guess when I talk today, I'll talk about in the context of me personally, I never encircled more than once for the one tournament where I could do it. And Maleceptor was only casting three times with the plus one cast. But the vast majority has been the past FAQ where I primarily played a little bit of a different list from most people. It wasn't particularly obvious straight away. I was playing a single battalion. I was playing only one Hive Tyrant. I was playing two big bricks of nine warriors and playing two harpies as well and the Maleceptor. And that's basically the core of the build. That's probably the most 1,400 points. And then for me, that represented what I considered basically seven threats. I had two warriors, a Maleceptor, a Flyer, and two harpies. And then I also had something else in there I forgot. But that was basically like the core of the army. And
good target saturation, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if people are familiar in UK, I think that's, if there was one thing that would define UK players, I think target saturation is definitely the way that we look at things. I think the US is a lot more toolboxy and a lot more rounded. And I think UK, EU is kind of skewed heavily towards the WTC terrain, which can warp the lists over there as well. But I think, if anything, the WTC terrain and the playstyle in Europe, as per my understanding, leads players to play a more toolboxy rounded dimensional list as well. So that's just kind of how we play over here in the UK. We can argue for all days whether or not it's right or wrong, but that was kind of the list that I was playing. I was always big on warriors, that's for sure.
Okay, yeah, I mean, to me, it was also one of the most immediate observations that Leviathan and warriors go together. If you want to make the most of it, the most of the buffs and so on, which, you know, adrenal glands for 15 points and so on, you probably need to take bigger bricks because you want to make those buffs count and so on. I myself played a single Maleceptor, a single Harpy, just because I felt from the very beginning that those units are undercosted. And I knew that probably nerfs were coming, and they are here. But yeah, do you remember what you supplemented the list with? So did you have any utility units in there as well? Something to do the missions? How did you complement your list?
Yeah. So I'll just talk about this in context of probably what is four tournaments that I played, and my list basically didn't change across four tournaments. So the list was a Neurothrope, a Flyerin in the HQ slot, 2x9 warriors with six guns on each, Adrenal, one with Fleshhooks. And then I had 2x3 warriors. And then I had the 1x3 Tyrant, 1x3 Venom Thropes, 1x3 Zone Thropes, two Harpies, and a Maleceptor. And basically, I was concerned. I wanted to play the mission as well, which was a big concern of mine. So what I realized is that basically, if I went first, you know, I was probably winning because I have huge threat saturation to begin with. But a couple of secondaries that I actually really enjoyed were, one was I took it in the finals, Investigate Signal, which unfortunately they've gotten rid of now. But I actually thought Investigate Signal was very good. And that's why I like to take, I had six units of 1x3 units, or maybe it was five units of 1x3, where I could commit into the center. And then if I took Investigate Signal, Warp Ritual, and Stranglehold on a five objective mission, I could basically just do stuff in the middle of the board, and my opponent would have to, all my points are just generated from being in the middle of the board. And so my opponent is quickly okay, I need to contest the midboard, and contesting the midboard against my army is very, very, very difficult.
True.
So a little bit of utility in there. I think Venom Thropes were, if I had to pick one MVP unit, it was definitely the Venom Throat. They are 100% busted. I don't know why they cost 105 points. For anyone that doesn't know, Venom Thropes have a units within, -1 to hit aura against ranged attacks. And then in addition, you can make them stationary in your movement phase for one CP, you can extend their aura to 12 inches, and it's a three-man group. So you can move your entire army, advance your entire army across the board, and your entire army is still -1 to hit because you chain everything back into a unit that can't even be seen behind obscuring. So that to me was the unit where that was just a massive defensive layer. And given that the other top army in the game was a gunline, Aldari, or Tau potentially, but they can't really beat you if you play solid. That's just an absolute game changer, yeah.
Yeah, and you can stack so many buffs on top of one another with the narratives and so on. The army is just, it becomes nigh indestructible. So, yeah. Right. So people on the internet were very vocal about how indestructible the Tyranids are, how what a powerhouse they are, really. So, yeah, we could expect nerfs. I think the FAQ came first, or the errata, whatever you call it, as you mentioned. So a nerf to the Maliceptor, a nerf to Encircle the Prey, some other things. Apparently, that was not enough. So, how did you react to the errata first? Well, I mean, did that come as a surprise, or was it actually something expected?
Yeah, I think the errata, let's talk about Maliceptor first. I went from playing two to playing one. And at this point, I played a small tournament where I really enjoyed two, and I was going into the next super major, Birmingham, where I was going to play one. I'd learned a lesson previously when I played Bristol, where I just submitted the same list despite changes having happened to it, and it kind of bit me in the ass. So I really wanted to play test and make sure whether or not I was going to play two or one Maliceptor. And that was a huge difference, because the unit basically had gotten its output reduced by, you know, roughly 30%. And if you're playing two, like 20%. So I really didn't want to go in and get caught up by actually Maliceptor is nowhere near as good. And I'll be honest with you, when you can only cast... So they also changed the ability. They clarified that you can't do a psychic action and an action, so you can never get 12 mortal wounds off. But the ability just to simply reduce its output from 9 mortal wounds to 6 on a cast of 7 plus was actually almost enough for me to cut it straight from the list. And the main reason where I wanted to keep just one in was because of the psychic imperative that it provides. So it lets you do action, advance an action, fall back an action, and something else I can't remember off the top of my head.
Cast and action or something. Like, yeah. You can cast and do actions, I think.
Yeah, psychic action and psychic. Mm-hmm. And once again, another reason why I kept that in was because I wanted to take Investigate Signal potentially in the Eldari matchup, where I could have a non-psychic centerboard action to do for points. I thought the Maliceptor, I thought it kind of made sense. Like, okay, sure, plus one to cast, going to characters only. Like, okay, I can get that. That's fine. I think given how strong the Maliceptor was before, I think that was actually like a quite nice and mature approach to target nerfing the Maliceptor. Encircle the Prey, on the other hand, though, I was disappointed with kind of how they approached their nerfing on that one. To me, I don't like it when GW take an ability that is, we all know, is too strong, clearly too strong, and they absolutely nuclear missile it to being terrible.
Do away with it completely, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just a poor approach to balancing the game. And I said the exact same thing when Custodes got nerfed with the CP changes. I thought, you've got a great army here that's, you know, got that is strong, but it has the potential to be just a good army, and they just nerfed them completely into the ground, and they've just nerfed them again into the ground. I think that's a bit of a shame. I think they could have moved Encircle the Prey to the similar AdMech one, acquisition at all costs, where you could auto pass morale. They just made that once per game, and you have to be wholly within 6 inches of the objective. That made that stratagem just good. Like, you knew that you could use it to save yourself once. That was kind of good. Instead, Encircle the Prey, as I said, when it got nerfed, this no one's going to ever take this again, and I've certainly never played it. You're not going to encircle your 10 gargoyles to go rod. They have like 30 millimeter bases and giant wings. You're never going to be able to rod the quarter.
Yeah, to place them on the table in a good spot. So it's a shame.
Yeah. So I think the primary, I think before then, the list that had the two Flyerants, the two Maliceptors, were actually the optimal lists where you can encircle both. But I still wasn't playing that. And to be honest, I didn't have an optimal list at that time. But after the nerf, I was already playing a list that worked really, really well with the encircle nerf happening already. So yeah, that's kind of how I approached it. I cut the Maliceptor down from 2 to 1, kept playing the single battalion starting at 10 CP, and I managed to win Birmingham Super Major just after that errata. That was the first tournament for that errata.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, so I spoke to a bunch of our regulars from the podcast. I spoke to a bunch of friends on the Polish Discord, and I think there has been and there still is a certain agreement that Tyranids, in terms of like nerfing, in terms of balancing them out or balancing them down, they will most likely see the same fate as the Drukhari, which means probably not Castoli's path, where the like huge nerf path, boom, the army is almost gone. But on the contrary, it's going to be like a bunch of nerfs that are going to bring them, or I don't know, take them down from that high horse. Potentially, I guess, because the Codex has extremely good internal balance. At least, would you agree with that? That there are, you know, choices that you can use.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of depth to the Codex, and I think people are going to be exploring that depth. Now, I will say Termagants and Hormagaunts are awful. But yeah.
I have 10 Hormagaunts in my every list, and they do wonders to me. I mean, so for objective grabbing, for, you know, they can, you can shoot them across the table with their 6 inches of advance, even in Leviathan and so on. So they do a lot of heavy lifting for me. Of course, they die fairly quickly, but for 80 points, I always take a unit just because they give me that table control. But I understand, you know, I don't see them very often in lists, so there must be a reason. I'm just this romantic type that takes what he likes, and I'm still luckily successful with that. So there is good internal balance in the book, but the first round of nerfs is here. Today, the points changes dropped. How do you feel about those changes?
I think if you were going to stop listening to the podcast here, I would say that Tyranids got off very lightly. I think that they are, my summary would be that they're still the best army in the game, and the gap between Tyranids and other armies now might be bigger than what it once was previously, because a lot of armies went down and got nerfed a lot, and Tyranids were already very, very, very strong. Well, they were by far the strongest. And I think that combined with the new CA changes, Tyranids fit very well into, I think that they've got an even greater gap between them and other armies now.
Okay, so, that's an interesting take, but let's break it down into pieces. So let's start with the point changes, then hopefully, if time allows, we will also jump to Nephilim and to the changes that the new chapter approved brings. So the points changes to the units. Have you calculated how many points your list has become more expensive?
Yeah, I think someone did it for me previously, and that it was about 225 to 250 points. Yeah, it was, it was quite a bit. Yeah,
right.
All notable though, a lot of that was in one unit, right? So a lot of that was in the Maliceptor. So 50 points of that in one unit, which means that just simply changing one unit, you can avoid a lot of a huge amount of those increases.
So are those point changes good? Are those point changes? I mean, and I'm not asking about were the units undercosted? Because probably they were. But when we look at, you know, what the changes actually are, so you would see that, for example, the Warriors went up by measly 5 points. So in Leviathan, I don't feel discouraged from taking, you know, 27 Warriors. I wouldn't. I don't even have 27. I usually play like 22, 21. But people who take 27 will probably still take 27. So is GW going the right way with those point changes?
I think, previously I was quite critical of GW's kind of immature response to doing these points changes. I think, first of all, at a very high level, there were a lot more nuanced changes and points directions that they could have taken to the Tyranid changes. For example, there are a load of loadout options that could have had points put on them. For example, the best example was Warriors, Bone Swords and Scything Talons. One is a lot better than the other. And why are they the same amount of points? Like, everyone was running Bone Swords. They could have put points up on Bone Swords, points up a little bit of points on Warriors themselves to encourage at least a bit of nuance in the list building. But right now there are auto attacks, which kind of doesn't feel good. So I think from a high level, for many, many, many units, there were loadout options that I think would have been added a bit more dynamism to the game in terms of creativity in list building. But let's kick it off with Warriors. So in my previous list, a block of 9 with adrenal glands and 6 guns was, I think, 275 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was taking 6 guns in those groups. And the guns are 5 points each. So you can quickly come to the conclusion that if you drop the guns, the Warriors are at the same points at what they are now. And the guns are actually, even Despoters are like really good. They're 24-inch range, strength 5, -2, 1 damage, right? that's assault weapon. That's perfectly playable. If that's the only gun they had, people still wouldn't complain. And now that Eldari have been put down a bit and Tau have been put down a bit, I think 24-inch guns are perfectly playable. I think previously I played the 36 on the Barbed Stranglers because I needed to reach Dire Avengers with an advance and shoot. That was a big part of why I love them. And with the blasting, it's a 10-man squad, minimum 3, strength 6, minus 1, great into Dire Avengers. So now I think, given that other armies have changed, actually just playing the Warriors completely bare bones, you can get a squad of 30, squad of 9 for 270 now. Adrenal glands on top of that puts them at 285. So realistically, you drop some guns that arguably could be better in some matchups anyway, and it's only a 10-point upgrade on the whole unit. So I think that's pretty light for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that spitters are perfectly fine to use synaptic lure or whatever the stratagem is that allows you to charge and 3d6, which I use in every game. So or shard lure, yeah. So you don't really need venom cannons that are d3 shots anyway. So they're pretty random, and you know, I prefer to do away with randomness from my lists. So I'm not really hurting a lot. And you're perfectly right. You drop some guns, and the cost of the unit stays pretty much the same, even despite
Most importantly, the best part about Warriors is exactly the same points cost. They're melee. Warriors are one of the best melee units in the entire game. You charge stuff with Warriors and it dies. You can charge 3 little knights with a 9-man block plus 1 attack, hitting on 2s, rolling 1s. You're going to delete 3 knights, especially if they don't have minus 1 damage. They're absolutely phenomenal in melee. And Transhuman makes them incredibly bad, hard to kill, because if knights don't have natural rerolls or a big Space Marine character doesn't have rerolls, you know, you're just halving the number of wounds that they're going to do straight off the bat. And then you're a wound free model with access to minus 1 damage, and you've got interrupt. It's insane. Me charging with Warriors was what won me almost every single one of my games. They're fantastic. So I think Warriors are just, they're still so good. And, you know, it's important to keep in mind, like, when you look at your army's points going up, you know, other armies that were the top tier armies are also going up too, right? It's not as if, you know, Eldari are not getting points increases or Tau are not getting points increases, stuff that would blow you off the board. You know, the Space Marines didn't even get that many points drops. So, like, realistically speaking, your model, you know, your model efficiency is going up, like, your model inefficiency for Warriors is going up like 5 to 8%. But realistically speaking, compared to these armies, they're like 30% better. So you're still in, I think you're still on really good grounds with them. Yeah. I think they should be the backbone of many lists.
Sorry, say that again.
I just think they're still going to be the backbone of many lists. And what I will say is that I was playing kind of an archetype that me and my team were very surprised that no one copied particularly after I won Birmingham. We were very surprised that no one had just straight up copied my list. And just in the Newcastle event recently, people had actually just more or less copied my list. So I think people are coming to that realization now that actually just Warriors they're just a freaking bomb. Like, why would you not
absolutely
play this?
They absolutely are. I think that Transhuman is the strongest of all abilities. And again, as I said, you can stack a lot of buffs on them. I heard, I think that was some wishful thinking from non-Tyranid players in the Polish Discord today, where they said that tomorrow in the data slate, we're going to see Transhuman for Warriors drop from, you know, 1 to 3 to wound to 1 to 2 to wound. So similarly to like the little bugs. We'll see. Do you think that would change a lot?
The reason I don't think they do that is because they would never remove the synapse key from Warriors. And if they removed, if they made the Leviathan trait just 1 to 2 always fails, it would be completely useless. Because it would never affect a monster. So I think what they would do maybe is they would do a ramshackle effect to it. So if it's less than strength, it's greater than strength 8. You know, you don't get Transhuman, for example, or something like that. That's the one thing I'm kind of looking out for in tomorrow's kind of speculation, is if they change a Transhuman to a ramshackle type effect, which, you know, I think it would still be really powerful. But I think Kraken is really, really good too. I also think there's kind of options in Jormungandr or Behemoth as well. I think Kronos, you know, potentially, like, it really depends on the meta. The meta was so killy in the last month, where you needed to play Leviathan as well. But yeah, there are other changes as well. Raveners going up 5 points. I still think Raveners and guys in the US and a lot of people, you know, soft spot in their heart for Raveners, still think they're really good. 35 points a model. I still think they're great. The only issue is that they don't have synapse. but you know, you can chuck them forward and trade them. They're great trading pieces. And I think if the kind of meta is a little bit more marine focused and AOC focused, and you know, sisters are looking very, very strong. You know, your one damage rending claws are looking great against against those type of armies. They've also got the threat range where you could out threat range Repentia, for example. So I think they're looking great. Then we've got the Harpy as well. Mate, the Harpy only went up 10 points. Now, I think the Harpy is a bit of a dividing point in the Tyranid community as well. Some people live by the Harpy and some people die by the Harpy, but I'm definitely a Harpy fan. I think that they're absolutely incredible. And I think that the Stranglethorn Cannon is actually a very, very, very good profile just in and of itself. Okay. When I first saw it, I was like, I'll just play the Stranglethorn Cannon when it got spoiled. And then I quickly realized that, no, I should play the Heavy Venom Cannon. But I think the Stranglethorn Cannon, now that the meta is shifting as well, is going to be great. I think Spore Mines are actually really powerful. You know, your ability, just you can play defensively with your Harpy. You can move in an L back towards your deployment zone, drop a Spore Mine in a ruin up front, get an angle down a ruin side to shoot 36. Your Harpy is safe. You've got Spore Mines in the front. And, you know, Spore Mines, you just advance them and they can. I've like one shot like a Grey Knight's character with Spore Mines once. It was like absolutely mental. Like these things are wicked lethal. So I think Harpies, which are a huge predator, I think got off really, really good. You know, Stranglethorn Cannons are, whatever way you look at it, Stranglethorn Cannons still an excellent profile. You know, flat two is great, negative two, you know, it's a really good situation. What do you think?
So I have one in my list and I will keep having one in my list. I said that a couple of months ago, even if the points went up to 200, like, I don't know, 230 points, it's still probably worth to take it because it has so much utility. It moves blocks knights, it shoots well, it drops mines, you know, it does a lot of stuff, especially if you give it like four up invulnerable. However, again, recently I had a conversation with some Tyranid players and some representatives of the Polish national team, and they said they would be dropping the Harpy entirely from the list just because they are, I mean, you know, not the actual Tyranid players from the national team, but people who are close to the national team. And they said, it's not really a good idea to play it because it's too expensive. You need to give it that invulnerable to survive in the Knights matchup because you cannot hide the Harpy. It doesn't score your points. So it's just a big chunk of meat on the table that draws attention, dies first turn if you don't start, and that's it. So I want to ask you about your Knights matchup. Have you had those situations? Have you experienced, I don't know, a Harpy dying turn one without doing anything? How does that the Harpy work for you?
Well, Polish national team, I'll give you a bit of advice. Well, I played against Knights in the London Major, in the recently opened Imperial Knights. Six of the Knight, the little knights that had the twin
Heldrins,
which have an insane profile. And I've never played the four up invulnerable on my Harpy, for example. I've only ever played two Harpies, one with a synaptic upgrade. And here is my reasoning: A, I hate having fat in a list, so I will trim fat wherever I can. I'll be like, that's a warrior. Like, you know, I'll take a warrior over that. And the reason being is because with the Harpy, you activate the four up invulnerable. You have the one, if you fly them next to each other, you know, you always get the four up invulnerable because they have to shoot the synaptic one first, which has four up and transhuman. Then they can only kill the next one. So the turn that you blow your, you pop your imperative for four up, five up invulnerable, both your Harpies have a four up invulnerable anyway. And it's likely that if your opponent's going to shoot your Harpies, they're going to kill them in one turn. So if you can blunt the turn that they try and go for them, they basically can't, you know, you can't get through a three up, four up, T7 minus one to hit, transhuman, semi-transhuman, Harpy in one turn. And if they do that, perfectly fine. That's absolutely fine with me. You want to shoot my Harpy? That's fine. I'll just, you know, as long as you don't shoot my warriors, I'm absolutely fine. Because I know that my platforms are very difficult for you to kill. So just, I'm getting more efficiency across the game. And the next reason I started off not playing Harpies, I was like, you know what? It's just a aircraft chassis. It's going to die pretty easily. But what I realized is that if you don't play Harpies and you go first, you have almost no game plan. And to be able to go first and Harpy someone, and then if they kill your Harpies, it's perfectly fine because you advance your whole entire army up in the same turn. You take the whole mid board, and then you're going to charge them on turn two. And then they're like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, the Harpies simply give you time.
They give you time, yeah. And they're still hard to kill. And they obviously enable your synaptic buff. So, you know, you're playing against Eldari, right? Okay, you need to move your synapse Harpy so you can horror. And then Neural Parasite, their Swooping Hawks or Dire Avengers, if they're out, You know, so I think harpies are really fantastic. And they provide you, most crucially, that first turn. It's a hedge, right? It's a hedge against, if you do go first, you need to be able to do something, at least something proactive. And that's why I really love them. And then in addition to that, players will have to respect the harpy. If you drop them late as well into the deployment phase, they don't know that you might just be a crazy. You might just put them on the front line. They don't know. And then they're going, oh, you know, okay, moves 40, can get around this ruin. So they have to respect that. And players will respect that. And Eldari players in particular really have to respect the harpy, because if they don't block you where you can move and bomb, and then you can get lines to their swooping hawks or anything, like, that's game on. They're really on the back foot after that. So yep. Harpies for me, definitely good.
Really, yeah, the psychological effect they have on your opponents, and it's like, if you have two, then your opponent, you know, will try probably to hide as much as possible, so you don't get the corners and you cannot really see them and so on. Knights players will probably try to hide behind terrain, which is crucial, because my observation, like my last five games have been against knights of different flavors. So Imperial Knights, Renegade Knights. And in all games, I observe that the Knights are slower. So yeah. With the new codices, they move slower. So it's actually, especially on WTC terrain, where the tables are dense with terrain, they have to walk around. So if you force your opponent to hide behind terrain, go a little bit further back so that it's more difficult to reach with your harpy, for example, it gives you an advantage, because it will take them longer to get to the middle of the table and so on, and you have another turn of shooting against them, which is of immense value.
Yeah, precisely. I think Knights is a very good matchup for Tyranids in general, especially because Tyranids are the most three-phase army in the game. You've got good shooting, you've got amazing psychic, which is insanely good against Knights, and then you've got absolutely bonkers strong melee. Like, warriors just eat Knights for a living. And then the next big guy that is fantastic against Knights is, of course, the Flyerin that went up 20 points. So he's gone from 190 to 210. And I think even at 210, he's an absolute steal still. I think even with the CA changes, you put Reaper of Obliterax on him, and you can pick up a small knight almost from 100 to 0, 13 or 14 wounds. He can choose through that easy. Full rerolls to wound. He's absolutely amazing, and he's so hard for armies to deal with. And I'm still going to be playing Bodyguard Flyerant, I think. I think against, depends on how many shooting armies there are in the game, actually. But that combo or synergy is absolutely insanely strong. And I think Tyrant Guard now, because they didn't get a points increase, are actually just a perfectly fine unit. You know, you got a 2-up save T6, 4 wounds for a 40-point model. That's perfectly fine. So, I would still take the Flyerant, even a 20-point increase. Which, what I wouldn't take is, I wouldn't take the Warcrint now, because I don't think you'd ever take a Warcrint over a Flyerant. Warcrints also went up 20 points, guys. And then, so I wouldn't also go more than one battalion as well. So I think you should only play one battalion in the new era. I think you should have only probably played one battalion previous to that as well, because CP is so very, very useful. But yeah, keep playing the Flyerant. And don't play the next one, which is the Maliceptor, which has got 50 points.
When I saw that rumor, because we got the rumors a couple of days or weeks ago that it might go up by 50 points, I immediately envisioned that meme from The Simpsons, like, stop hitting him, he's already dead. So it's really adding insult to injury with this one.
Yeah, I think for me personally, and of course I'm a little bit biased, and I'm talking about the very top echelons of play, I think the Maliceptor was on the verge of being cut from my list, because very, very good players will not let you Maliceptor them very much at all. That's just a reality. Like, it doesn't move fast. It's merely kind of average. It's just very tanky. So it really comes online on like turn 3, 4, and 5. It doesn't do anything the first couple of turns. I think if they put it to 20 points, if they put it up 20 points, it would have been in a very interesting spot. I think there would have been a lot more list nuanced decision to make. Mm-hmm. Obviously at 220 points, with including the 50-point upgrade, it's just a non-sequitur. It's a non-starter now. Unfortunately, it's just not active enough, and it doesn't do enough damage. Lo and behold, even Marine players, you know, trust me, it doesn't do enough damage at 220 points.
Have you ever used the buff that he gives? So the, you know, lower strength on shooting? Because some people still say that this in itself is of extreme value. And for example, if warriors should drop in, I mean, not warriors, the transhumans should change or whatever, it's not possible to buff warriors the way you can do today, the Mala Scepter could be something that actually keeps warriors alive longer.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think here's a great example, actually. I think if warriors lose transhuman, let's just say they do lose transhuman, I don't think you should play them. I think that maybe you could play a 4x5 in Kraken or something like that, maybe, but then you could probably just play Ravenous. So if warriors lose transhuman, you can't stack all the buffs. They're probably not good. Now, the Mala Scepter is an interesting one now at 220 because there are actually some monsters that did not get increases, right? There are monsters that were kind of on the fringe of playability where you kind of went like, oh, you know, that's not bad. When you look at the toughness to wounds ratio, that definitely have flown under the radar now. So I'm looking at the Horror Specs. The Toxicrine, if you can manage to play it physically. Even the Morlock and the Trigon and are not actually that bad. Like, for the body that you get on it, it's actually reasonably powerful now, considering that Hail of Doom will be out of the meta. You can't, like, these monsters now are going to be nowhere near as easy to blow up as they once previously were. Your opponent's going to be shooting, instead of, you know, 40 shots at auto wound on sixes at one damage, they're going to be shooting like four melters or something like that. And if you've got a four up and vulnerable, minus one to hit, these monsters are significantly tougher than what they used to be. So, and they're only like 125 points, 140 points. Like, a Horror Specs like is 150, I think. And then if you also give it the four up and vulnerable, it's like 170. And it's like a 15 wound T8 two up save model. Yeah. Like, it's actually quite good. So I think those models have kind of flown under the radar. The Biovore, I never played it personally, but I noticed it didn't get a points increase. So, you know, maybe the Pyrovores, now that I'm onto it, you know, plus 10 points. I personally probably wouldn't pay them anymore just because their output isn't really that high and they give up quite a bit of no prisoners points. Mm-hmm. Those bigger monsters are quite interesting. The Tyrannocyte only went up 10 points, which I think is actually kind of good still. Mm-hmm. It's got some reasonable combos. And then the Death Leaper, I think, went up 25 points. He honestly, I think, got the Mala Scepter treatment. I don't think he's going to be playable at 25 plus points.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And so I think actually now, I to be honest with you, I think the Death Leaper going up points is absolutely fine because the Lictor, it needed some more differentiation from the Lictor. Mm-hmm. We're only 25 points. You just thought, why would I not take a Death Leaper? And I actually think the Lictor is probably a perfectly fine data sheet now. I think it's kind of in that same position of Horror Specs and Toxicrine maybe, or Trigon or Morlock or something. Because actually for 70 points, when you look at the data sheet now in light of other data sheets that have been increased, you're kind of like, oh, that's actually quite good. Cranial Feasting got buffed as well, which kind of synergizes with. And then I think maybe now the 2-inch plus charge aura for 1 CP is maybe a potentially good stratagem as well. So I guess the overarching point is, like, even though I've been rambling on for the last 10 minutes, but I think the overarching point is actually, like, even though we've had, and I think some people's immediate gut reaction are like, whoa, there's a lot of points increase. Mm. I think there's a lot of good stuff in the codex still. Like, I didn't even mention Zonthropes didn't get touched. Venomthropes didn't get touched. Tyrant Guard didn't get touched. And those were basically staples in every single list. I think most players that play 40K would look at those data sheets and go, you know, those are perfectly good mm-hmm. data sheets. In fact, very strong data sheets.
I'm actually a little bit surprised that they didn't touch the Biovores. Again, I'm speaking from like the Polish experience. I haven't played them myself because I wasn't really ever, or I have never been a big fan of the mind spam. But I did hear players talk about taking harpies, taking biovores, and being able to spam mines to the point where you were playing a 2300 point game against your opponent who was playing 2000 point game, because you get the mines for free, you get the mines to, you know, you can drop them on people, you can drop them on the table, you can position them well. If you position them well, you can move block people and so on and so on. Nothing was done to that, and in Poland these have been abused for a while. I'm shocked to see they didn't touch them, they didn't change their points, they didn't change the rules. We'll see what the data slate brings, but for now, it seems that this is still, or can still be abused.
Could be an archetype. And I think Biovores pair well with Grind Them Down, which I think is a very interesting combination to potentially look into the new chapter approved with. I will note, an experienced Tyranid player will note that Biovores did get a slight downgrade and that the Mala Scepter got a side nerf, well, got the 50-point increase, where previously you would do the action and shoot and shoot. So you get that turn where you basically shoot twice with them, which I think is probably a side grade. So, well, it's definitely a nerf, indirect nerf per se. But yeah, they're definitely an interesting option. So yeah, look, I think there's so much depth in the Codex. There's so many good unexplored units. Like the Turvagon is like interesting, you know, even though I just said Termagants are bad, you know, it's actually Turvagon's not bad. Like it casts, it's really tough. And it's actually melee is quite good. Like you just run it up the board and kind of like, what are you going to do? Like, okay, it's got like four up and runnable or something. And, you know, T8, 16 wounds, and then it can't be targeted. And you get some free Termagants. Like you can always get 10 Termagants for free. Like that's not bad. Yeah, that's really strong, definitely interesting too.
So that's something that the Polish players are eyeing right now. So maybe playing that with a carpet of little bugs, you know, as a change to monsters only. That's one thing. But there is a thing that I wanted to ask about, because it seems, you know, as you said, the Codex is so well internally balanced that even after changes to points, there is still a lot of stuff that you can take. You've mentioned the Moloch, the Trigon, so units that are cheap and have utility as well. So they're like, again, they fit this toolboxy playstyle really, really well. But over the last couple of months, since Stampede had gone away, I haven't really seen people play Forge World. Do you think that now is the time to bring those monsters back on the tables?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? What is the Daimakiron still at? Is it still at 285 points?
Yes.
Oh, man, it's tough. Here's the thing about it, is that the models, they run on a 130 millimeter base, which is greater than 5 inches, which is a tough base size to play at.
I have to tell me, with WTC tables, I went to Krakow to an 18-man tournament in March, and I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that the round bases are so big, and I wanted to play fair. So I went to the referee when I wasn't sure, like, can my model go through the opening? And he was like, let me calculate that quickly. You know, the maps for WTC are supplied with like this inch paper sort of thing with the little squares. So he was like, what is the square root of, like, what is 2 times the square root of 5 or something like that? And, you know, it turned out that I was missing like 3 millimeters. For the model to pass, and my opponents all said, dude, if you want, you can just go, we don't care. But, you know, I cared, so I didn't use my hyro tools properly, so they only sat in the back and shot at stuff. That's why I'm not taking them, but for any other kind of terrain, I would probably consider them.
Yeah, they're interesting, aren't they? But I think if you would look, like, the most direct comparison I think is the Horus Bix and the Scythe hyro tool, where you've got a model that's at 150 points versus a model that's 235 points. They've both got like a, you know, almost 18 wounds. The Horus Bix doesn't hit as hard in combat, but doesn't reroll the ones to wound as well, but has a 2-up base save, moves a little bit faster. I think the Horus Bix is just kind of outshines all of those big monsters now, and is on an Exocrine base as well. Notably, the Exocrine went up 30 points, so like, don't play Exocrines. You shouldn't have played Exocrines anyway. But yeah, they I don't know why they put them up 30 points as well. That was just kind of shocking to me. They weren't, in my mind, I was not registering them on the S tier level as well. But yeah.
And what do you think about Carnifex is going up? Have Carnifex been, you know, a real threat on the tables?
Oh my god. I don't know why GW does this. Like, it's like they don't want this model ever to be good. Like, oh my god, there's so many things that you could do to fix the Carnifex. I don't know why they didn't make Carnifex as just a unit size, like a unit of three. Just make them a unit of three. Don't make them split up. And that'd be that alone would make them so much cooler. Like, you could put buffs on them, you could like give them feel no pain, you could like advance them all together. Like, oh my god, that would make them so much better. No, but of course they split up, so they're like just one-man unit things. The points increases are sadly, I think, you know, they were kind of on the fringe before, I think, and Hail of Doom made them look awful because -1 damage didn't do anything against all that.
Yeah,
they were slow as well. I think, honestly, 15-point upgrade on top of them, I don't think they're going to be playable, sadly, which is a huge, honestly, it's a massive shame, because I think Carnifex is just such an iconic Tyranid unit, and they're just kind of fun, you know. You get them in there, they just look great, you know, just like want to hug people and like eat them with like 11 attacks. And, you know, they're just kind of fair, right? They move 8, they, you know, you can maybe make them advance and charge. They get in there, they're kind of a little bit tanky, but they're not impossible to get through, you know. Yeah, it's a shame. And the heavy Venom cannon also got increased as well. So
yeah,
unfortunately, I wouldn't be expecting to see them on the tabletop. I also don't think the secondaries work well with counter fixes now as well, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, so I'm going to a tournament this weekend with my co-host Joker and like some other people. We're going to have like a 42-man event, and I took 3 Carnifexes in my list because I like the idea of cheating a little bit or abusing the to the last rule with Carnifexes a little bit. The Carnifexes have this tendency that as soon as you start upgrading them, they become extremely expensive. So I think my unit of 3 Carnifexes with enhanced senses, Venom Cannons, and 2 of them having crashing claws against knights, just to be sure, is somewhere around 410 points or something like that. The cool bit, if you split them up and take to the last, you need to, even if you lose one, you still score 3 points. So your opponent needs to put some extra effort into denying you to the last, which is going away, which doesn't matter anymore, but so far it's been fun. So I think they had or there was room for them. I might look into other variations. I don't know, Screamer Killers or something like that, maybe. Mm-hmm. But 15 points, a little bit uncalled for, maybe.
I think the way they look at it is they could have had a month where Carnifexes were just like good. And I don't think anyone in the community would have been like, oh my God, Carnifexes are so good. And they could have just been like, next month, okay, we'll put them up by 10 points if they're really good. Like, at least give them a chance, come on, like, just give them a chance. But yeah, maybe we should segue into, because you started it, the new chapter approved.
And that's what I thought. Yeah, so it's about to be released. I think the majority of rules within that are already known, so there is no problem with us discussing it. Let's start with the amount of CP. So, in Strikeforce missions, you now start with 6, and the most important, that's one of the most important bits. So you start with 6, the cost of detachment hasn't changed, but you generate 2 CPs per battle rounds, so 1 per player turn. Is that a significant change, and is that going to change or shift the meta in any way? And what does it mean to Tyranids?
Yeah, so I'll also caveat that with the fact that you have to pay, you don't get a free relic and warlord trait, so anyone who wants to take one of each of those is probably starting on 4, for example. This is an absolutely huge change to the way that we play 40k. I think it's probably it's bigger than the AOC indirect balance update, in my opinion. And I think at a very high level, Tyranids are one of the armies that actually function best with this. And the reason why that is because Tyranids naturally build into a single battalion. Fantastic. They also have basically 1 and 2 good, they have lots of good warlord traits and relics, but they have 1 and 2 that are very, very, very good. Like, if you're playing big blocks of warriors, direct guidance is just straight up +1 to hit. Like, that's value. But you can even get away with that. Then Reaper of Obliterax, like, you want to take that. It's just fantastic. Or the Morclaws, maybe, or Scythes or something like that. But you want to take 1 relic weapon for your Hive Tome. So you can get away with just having 1 relic and warlord trait because your army has a lot of natural command-based buffs it gives out. You've got the rotating imperatives. And I think it's going to function perfectly fine. And the reason why also it's so good for Tyranids is that it hits basically every other army in the game really hard. Eldari, and I will put my hand on heart when I say this, even if Eldari didn't get changed, no points increases, no Hail of Doom increases, I don't even think they could be an S-tier army just because of the chapter approved changes. And the reason that is because they would basically start the game on 0 or 1 CP, which means that they wouldn't be able to Phantasm. They would have only 1 CP reroll, which if they fail a psychic power is massive. And so it's just, they wouldn't be able to Bladestorm turn 1 or something like that, which is so hard for the army to function. So anything that wants to take an outright of detachment, for example, is like straight away, you're 3 CP. So you're basically not taking a relic and warlord trait. And then if you don't want to take your outrider, a lot of these armies that would typically be skewed into 1 outrider where they have 6 fast attack, for example, or tower, for example, they would alleviate that troop tax. And Eldari have awful troops. Like, they got to pay 80 points times 3 for guardians or rangers or something like that.
That don't do anything.
They're terrible. Yeah. So it's either they take a point tax, which is like 150 point increase, or they take a 3 CP tax, which is backbreaking. And I reference Eldari a lot because I think it was pretty clear that Eldari was the second best army in the game, and Turners
were. Or Tau.
Or Tau, right? So yeah, the new CP changes, I think, relatively speaking, are very good for Turners because you can get away with one battalion perfectly fine, and you naturally want to play with a lot of CP. Like I was playing with 10 CP previously. So I saw some people playing like 7, 8, 9, but 10 to me, I used all of them every single game. You know, I would use them to increase my consistency. I would always shard lure. I'd reroll my advances. I'd reroll my psychic test on my Maliceptor if I got less than a 7 on the 3d6 because I'm like, that's just 3 mortal wounds. Like, I would use it for that. So there's lots of good things to use in Turners. And actually, I think they just function. You could play the army with no relics or war traits, and I think the army would just function absolutely fine. So a lot of armies don't have that. You know, they need like, you know, the Shining Spear that has like the relic on it, or the Troopmaster relic and 2 warlord traits, you know, or you've got like, you know, 4 traits across your Tau army or something like that, right?
Or if you want to bring 3 commanders, you need 3 detachments or something like that. And commanders is where the power sits as well. So
exactly right. So I think that's another big reason why I think Turners really, really come off great. Yeah. And then you've got the old segue this time into the mission secondaries. Now, we all know that Stranglehold is gone and To the Last is gone. To the Last was the key favorite for 2 armies that were the next powerful armies, Tau and Eldari. It was literally just auto attack. Like, if you weren't taking To the Last, you were either extremely good player or you didn't know what you were doing. So because Swooping Hawks, you know, they're just insane. They're too difficult to interact with. So that change, me personally, I never took To the Last in my army. I just bullied everyone on the board. So I used all my resources every single game. And I think that was the most best way to play Warriors. So I think losing To the Last is absolutely fine. Losing Stranglehold is definitely a hit for Tyranids. But what I will say is that Stranglehold was basically a universal secondary that almost every single army took. Maybe bar Tau. However, Tau would take the Tau Stranglehold. You would still take Stranglehold in Eldari as well. I think Manny Chima took it a lot in his place. So I think that's kind of just like a universal change that affects kind of a lot of armies. So relatively speaking, I think Turner's kind of got off like okay with that one. And then you've got the faction secondaries. Now this is where I think Turner's definitely didn't come off as well. We don't have good faction secondaries. We have one that is on the what I would say is like quite reasonable, and that's Cranial Feasting because it just got buffed. It's more or less, if you guys haven't checked it out, a better version of Assassinate. So now it just gives 3 victory points every character you kill, as long as you kill them in melee. But I mean, come on, you should be doing
that's
that.
That's what you're doing with Turin, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what you should be doing, guys. Mm-hmm. And then you also get to get 3 CP if you get a command point back. So not only are we playing on less command points now, but you've got a secondary that you can get command points back. And actually it's quite reasonable because I think a lot of lists will be taking those a little bit more characters because they can't have those warlord traits and relics to do the buffing role that those previously, you know, that they do. Whereas, you know, you can fill it out with characters to kind of fill that role in. So if your opponent's got like 4 characters, like, you know, take Cranial Feasting, like it's perfectly fine.
Especially that you can take, like, you don't have to really think about taking too many from one book or taking some from Chapter Approved. You can mix and match and do whatever you want now. So it's interesting also that they actually made a step back and changed the approach to secondaries, because at first they said you can only take one, and now they said, well, you know, knock yourself out, take 3 from the book if you want. So
yeah, I think it's a cool change personally. I think it's good. It does worry me that some factions will have very good faction secondaries that will carry them, whereas their codex probably, you know, or their data sheets wouldn't do that. So I think it can lead you into a position where if you have a good data sheet army with good faction secondaries, it will be miles above anything else. So it kind of worries me, but, you know, we'll hold faith in them. Sisters is a great example, right? You've got Sisters and my teammate, Sadvik Vijay, who's number 1 in the world right now. You know, we both think that Sisters are in a really good position because they have faction secondaries that are fantastic. And so basically across the board, guys, secondaries are getting harder to score. There's not as much points to gain from them. And so if you've got access to good faction secondaries, that's a really big advantage that you've got over other armies. So, you know, faction secondaries are going to have a huge impact. In terms of Turnids, the ones that I'm looking at are banners. I'm looking at Mental Interrogation or Warp Ritual. Mental Interrogation also got buffed again, which is the best. It's probably the best secondary in the entire game right now. So you should be looking to do that. And then I also think grind them down is really interesting for Tyranids, especially if you're playing the big bricks. Now, grind them down can be flexed into assassinate. And previously for me, that was going to be investigate signal, but they got rid of that. But I think that third secondary, if you take banners and mental interrogation warp ritual, that third secondary is probably where you're going to build your entire list around.
Very much so.
You might take engage on all fronts. If you say have a monster based list that has maybe a tyrannocyte and a monster within it, then you got good access to engage on all fronts. So I think, that third one is probably good. What I will say that is that I think the changes they made to banners is very, very bad for the game.
Interesting.
I think interesting that banners is,
can you explain?
I think it's far too strong, and I think it's boring, basically. Banners, if you guys don't know now, are basically much more harder to interact with. You basically put your banner up, and they can't really knock it down, and you can knock them off it and then score it afterwards, if I'm correct. But basically, you can't put a unit on it to deny them the opportunity of raising the banner to begin with as well. So previously, banners, I think, was in a really good place because there was a trade-off, right? You could put a unit on to block it. You could work out the points difference that would create. It was a lot. It created a to and fro in the game. But now I think there is zero incentive to try and block a banner because, A, you can't. And I think that many armies can just default to taking banners, right? Like, I think almost every game you play, you're just going to be like, both people take banners. I'm like, okay, it's a symmetrical board. You know, we've got
Worst case scenario, 8 points. Why not?
Worst case scenario, 10 points, right? Because you got two in your deployment zone or something. Like, if you can't hold two, you know, you're going to lose anyway, right? So I think, honestly, I mean, it's a little bit depressing on that one. I think that they've kind of made a bit of a mistake on that one. I think that it's just too easy to do, right? You know, you just submit your army roster, basically, and you can do banners. And if you can't do that, then, you know, you're probably playing knights.
So I think what GW is doing, but it's only my opinion and it could be completely wrong. I think they are doing as much as possible to make players interact with one another. If you look at the secondaries and the way they change, to the last is a very non-interactive secondary. You can basically sit back and, you know, with your brick of Terminators or something, don't ever get it to fight and you just score 15 points. I see why they are at least trying to do away with that. We'll see if it comes back in the next chapter approved, maybe. Stranglehold, although it promoted interaction, I think it was basically the same as play primary. So it wasn't really an interesting one. So they are doing away with this. But if you look at other secondaries, if you look at, I'll take first from the top of my head, Stubborn Defiance from Dark Angels. You no longer can sit on the objective in your deployment because they changed it so that you now have to hold an objective that is outside of your deployment. What that says, what GW is saying with that is go out of your deployment, move, be interactive, play the game, you know, with your opponent, not alone. So I think this is what they're going for. And in that, I salute them. I think that's the right thing to do. But on the other hand, limitation of CPs or, you know, no free relics and world traits, this will come as a great hit to certain armies. And I'm thinking of like demons, for example, that I think they will disappear completely, even though they are not like a very frequent army. Now you won't see them at all, because if you cannot, I mean, if you force them to spend everything on like exalted big demons and so on and so on, and they start with zero CP, there is no game for them. So
yeah, exactly right. I also think knights get hit very hard with the new CP as well, because there are a lot of good relics and world traits in knights, and I think that that's actually a fundamental part of how the army synergizes together to make them either a hard to kill or targets more difficult to kill or more efficient in shooting. I don't know them off the top of my head, but like the Bastard's Helm, and there's a couple wound and stuff that you can just give, and or you can multi bondsman and stuff like that, which is crucial to their army. So yeah, so I think, look, all in all, I think if you want the highest executive summary, points changes for Tyranids, you know, were on the first glance were quite large. However, all armies got quite big. All the top armies got quite big points increases. Tau got massive points increases, which probably relegated them to almost being unplayable. And then, so relatively speaking, Tyranids got off with a very light hand. Then you've got the new chapter approved coming, where Tyranids actually fare better than most armies in the game in that respect. So I think Tyranids relatively are coming off very well in that sense. And then all we've got to do is just fade the balanced data slate, where they're probably going to be changing one or two things about Tyranids. But I think rest easy, because whatever happens in the balanced data slate, Tyranids have a lot of good options that players haven't needed to explore yet. And I think the game is going to be opening up so much that once you understand the meta and understand what the top army is going to be bringing, you can very easily engage in the depth of the codex to mitigate or play the way that the game has changed in a new way. I didn't even mention like the Parasite of Mortrix. I never ran it personally. I mean, it might be really good now, you know, like really good, like flip an objective or do something like that, you know, or take something over, zip over, maybe put Gestation Sack or something on that alien cunning, or you know. So there's lots of different things to go, and I think don't just look at the changes and go, oh, my list went up, blah blah blah. Don't be afraid to try new things out.
Yeah, experiment.
Jump on TTS, find something that works for you, and like every single thing, every single list that works well builds around secondaries. So make sure you go, when you're going to build a list, go, what am I trying to achieve here? At a bare minimum, you have to have basically two secondaries that you take every game. So banners and mental interrogation or warp ritual, take that every game. For example, when I think about this, and then what's that third one? Okay, how can I dedicate 150 or 100 points to get to shore up that third one? So maybe it's an 8 or a 9 or on a heavy one, it's like a 12, for example. So always have that in a game plan in mind, and build your list around an archetype that makes your opponent really respect what the game plan that you're trying to do is. You know, if you're just like, oh, I think I might take this and oh, maybe that, you know, your opponent's going to go like, you know, I'm busy over here doing something powerful, so I don't really care what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I
couldn't have said it better myself. I'm also excited with you know, with the new points and chapter approved, because I think we're going to see some new old kids on the block that are going to come to power. I'm thinking specifically Death Guard. I'm excited to see them because they've got like price decreases across the board. It's looking really good for them, and I've seen some Polish Death Guard players really, you know, getting ecstatic over the point changes. And it's going to be fun to face them on the table with Tyranids as well. I think that the advice that you've given, very sound, very, you know, interesting to anyone who plays Tyranids, but also very interesting to anyone actually who is stepping into this new meta of tomorrow, because I think we can call it that. So points, I don't know if there is any tournament that is going to have, you know, to accept the new points and play with the new points, new rules this weekend. Probably next weekend will be the one taking into consideration all the cutoff dates and so on. It's an exciting time to be alive, simply.
Yep. I think Bournemouth is playing on the 16th to the 18th of July, which is quite a big UK super major. So that'll be that's my next tournament. So that's the one I'm going for. And just for the, like, in terms of time horizon, whether I think about it, I've only just, now that we've got points up, I've only just started asking my teammates and my playtesters to, you know, hey, let's start playing games, because I got a tournament in, you know, roughly 3 weeks' time. So I'm practicing a week and a half, 2 weeks out, and I'm practicing right up to the tournament, but until list submission, that's kind of what I'm thinking about. So that's kind of, if you want to do really, really well and really improve, like, now is the most exciting time, you know? If you've got access to potentially 3D printing or buying new models or something like that, then put the time in when everything is unknown, and that's the most time where you can leverage your expertise, or that's where your practice is really going to come through, where you can figure out things faster than every other player. That's what good players do at a large point. They figure out what's best and what's really powerful very, very quick and very early, and they put that, and then they master it after that. So if now is the best time, if you want to try something new or funky, you know, Spore Mines, Biovores, get that. You know, I was thinking, get that Horus Fix in the Tyranno site, play Kraken, and then get the Lictor. You auto advance at 8, and then you're within 6 inches, plus 3 to charge, because you pick the plus 1 to charge, and then you advance and charge your Lictor, maybe get him in, and then you get the Shard Lord, so you're charging on like a 6 re-rolling with your Horus Fix out of the Tyranno site. I mean, try something like that, you know, might be good.
yeah, there might be combinations that you don't even realize have been there, just waiting for you, but, you know, they were overshadowed by something else that now got it a nerf. So go through your book, whatever the book is, it could be Tyranids, could be anything else, and you might find that there is a plethora of choices now that you never really took into account.
I think it's a
good point to finish. I actually had heard my wife saying that the dog needs walking, so I think it's high time to finish now, before something bad happens. So listen, David, it's been a pleasure to have you. I'm really happy that you agreed to come. I hope that you will agree in the future to join me, or join me and Joker in some future episodes as well. I wish you all the luck in the tournament that you're going to represent Tyranids you know, well, and I will root for you definitely. And to our listeners, guys, if you like what we do, if you like the interviews that we do, if you like the information that we provide, subscribe, like, leave a comment. This helps us grow. This helps us reach new audiences. So we would be much obliged for that kind of help from you. Stay tuned for, I think on Friday, we will release yet another episode talking about the list for the tournament that we're going to this weekend. Some of the Polish national team representatives will also be there. I don't know if we will reveal their list because they are quite secretive about them and they don't want to show what they are going to take to WTC, but it's a testing ground for them. A lot of interesting stuff is going to happen. So if you're interested in that, tune in on Friday. There will be a new episode out as well. Thank you, David, one more time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time. Bye.
Until next time.